Case number 20-7018, Inna Khodorkovskaya, appellant, versus Jacqueline G. Gay and Kenneth K. Lynn. Mr. Foster for the appellant, Ms. Wall for the appellee.
Good morning, counsel. Mr. Foster, when you're ready, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. The court below erred in concluding that no reasonable person could believe that Inna Khodorkovskaya had been really called a prostitute and a murderer, and even if that were not the case, that those were simply unverifiable facts. To the contrary, the entire play focuses on the poem that's set forth in the prologue and its theme, the downfall of a powerful man because of his captivation by a voluptuous prostitute who orchestrates a murder for which he is blamed.
Mr. Foster, can I ask, how do we know that the whole play focuses on that poem? I've watched the play, and to be honest, I'm not sure what it focuses on. I think that's open to interpretation.
I believe if when you repeat something three or four times during a play, it's pretty focused.
I mean, Mr. Foster, the tiger appears two or three or four times. It's not a play about a tiger.
No, I agree. It's not. In fact, the tiger is nothing other than another literary method of showing the Putin character's strength and power.
I think the point of your opposing counsel is a lot of the play is, whether we call it literary method, literary license, artistic license, dramatic license, poetic license, historic license. This is a concept that's so familiar in art that we have half a dozen or a dozen words for it. How do we know that the portrayal of your client as a prostitute and a murderer is not historic license?
Because the play has a theme, and there's no question about what the theme is. The theme is the downfall of a powerful man because of his fascination with the prostitute who orchestrates the murder which causes his downfall.
Assume, Mr. Foster, that I think that we can't know with certainty what the theme of the play is, that's a question of that 100 people might give 100 different answers to. Assume I think that. I know you don't think that. Tell me how you can still win.
Because that's the issue for the jury. The issue for the court is, can it be interpreted this way? The issue for the jury is, does a reasonable audience interpret it that way? And so
when we look to a reasonable audience, I worry that your argument would require us not to ask what a reasonable audience member would think, but rather what the most gullible possible audience member would think. Because I will admit, I think there is probably an audience member in the crowd that will watch that play and will think gullibly that everything he is watching is an assertion of historical fact, the same as if he were reading an affidavit. But I'm not sure how a reasonable audience member could possibly think that when, for one thing, there's not only a tiger, but there's a ghost. There's Vladimir Putin quoting poetry. And it just seems like there's a lot in this play that a reasonable audience member would say, as I say when I'm watching a movie like Braveheart or a TV show like The Crown, I wonder what's true. I'm not sure. Maybe I'll look it up on the internet, or maybe I won't, and it's more fun to just not know. Isn't that what a reasonable audience member would, tell me why a reasonable audience member would not think that.
Not sure that's the standard. I think what Moldea tells us about Milkovich is that when somebody does a play of this sort, an author and a playwright, that they have to be sure that they don't, as Bugliosi says, they have to be sure that they avoid the impression that they are asserting objective facts. And when you,
Mr. Foster, tell me, and then I'll get out of the way here. Tell me how I can distinguish this play from a TV show I just mentioned that, frankly, I've been watching all week, is Netflix's The Crown. And some of it's true and some of it's false. And the writer of it says, I made some of it up. And if you go on the internet and Google how much of the crown is true, you get 65 million results with article after article listing all the things that are true, all the things that aren't. And in fact, one of the most renowned historians of the monarchy has written an entire book about what in the crown is true and what in the crown is false. And he goes episode by episode. How is this play different than that TV show? Or is your argument that the Queen of England has a false light claim against the Netflix show, The Crown?
If The Crown had implied forcefully that the Queen of England was a prostitute and a murderer, she would have had a false light claim. What this boils down to is you can't, as it says in Moldea, you can't just cloak a garden variety libel in a literary form and get away with it.
So can I ask a follow-up question? I think what you said earlier, at least in my mind, is one of the key questions in the case, which is what goes to the jury and what is something that a court decides and doesn't let it go to the jury. And you don't take the position that there can never be a work of historical fiction that's a play, such that there's certain things in the play that take license with respect to history, and a court could decide as a matter of law that that's just not something is going to go to a jury. Right. I mean, there's got to be some situations in which a court can decide that as a matter of law.
Absolutely. The court can decide it. And the closer
I'm sorry, can you just make sure you're speaking into your microphone? I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Sorry.
I'm sorry, sir. Yes, sir. I don't take that position. But the closer you get in your literary work to calling somebody a serious criminal, the less leeway you have.
Why is that? Because that seems to me, you can take literary license or dramatic license with that kind of assertion, no less than with any other kind of assertion. So is your position that it's the nature of the assertion that determines whether it's something that goes to the jury?
It's not only my position. I think that's the position of this circuit in Moldea. That's what the court says in Moldea. In fact, in Moldea, it says, talking about Milkovich, it says, Milkovich did not disavow the importance of context, but discounted it in the circumstances of that case. This would not be the case, talking about Moldea, if the review had said it was a badly written book because its author was a drug dealer. In that case, it would parallel Milkovich. The reviewer would have been employing the medium of a book review for what was a garden variety libel.
I think there's several different issues in a case like this. One of them is whether something's capably defamatory. And of course, it's true that when you accuse somebody of being a criminal, there's more of a sense that it's defamatory than some other things you could say about them. I get that. But is it your view that you can never have a play that's a work of historical fiction that suggests that a character is a criminal and have that be something that's interpreted as a matter of drama? Or every time you make a suggestion in a play that someone is a criminal, that's necessarily something that goes to the jury?
No, not at all. In fact, that's what I think Levin teaches us, that if you want to, if you're making that suggestion and you lay it out with three or four possible scenarios or two possible scenarios with facts supporting each one and give the audience the choice between those scenarios, you can do that.
But is that right then? So the playwright is limited to putting on a play. I mean, first of all, it's going to make a lot of plays four times as long if you have to set out four scenarios, right? And so one question is that what a playwright has to do, or can they give one scenario that itself is something that's a matter of conjecture? No, it's not that, I suspect that it's not that you have to give alternative scenarios to the audience. You can just choose one scenario and still describe it in such a way that it's still understood by the audience, or should be deemed to be understood by the audience, as something that's a dramatic suggestion because it's entertaining, as opposed to an assertion of fact.
And if you are careful and tell the audience that, and most important, if your play can have meaning without it saying that the person is a criminal. Here, this play has no meaning in the absence of the fact that Anna is a prostitute and a murderer, because that is the theme of the play. The downfall is caused by his fascination with this woman, and that she is this person. If they had wanted to say that Khodorkovsky had his downfall because he created the murder, that would have been a theme for the play. But that's not what they said.
But I guess to me, it seems like we're conflating two things. Because for purposes of this appeal, the district court assumed that the play asserted that she was a prostitute and a murderer. And then I'm willing to assume what you're saying, which is that this is a theme of the play. That's for purposes of the exchange we're having right now. The question in my mind is, even if we assume that that's the theme of the play, is an audience member supposed to be deemed to assume that the play actually is accurately recounting what in fact happened as a matter of historical fact? Or is an audience member thinking, well, yeah, this is loosely based on a historical episode, but it's just drama. And so I don't actually know what particular part of this is true and not true. It's just giving me something that's supposed to entertain the audience. It in fact has segments of the play where the characters are directly speaking to the audience. Nobody thinks that actually happened as a matter of history. And so the whole thing is couched in this notion that, yeah, we're taking some dramatic license here. We're grounding it in historical fact. And none of this should be taken as the gospel truth about what in fact happened. It's a drama about things that may or may not have happened.
I don't think that's what the play does. The play is devoid of meaning if that's what it's doing. The only way it has meaning is to assert that she is a prostitute and a murderer, and that caused his downfall. Otherwise, the play has no meaning at all.
Okay, let me make sure my colleagues don't have additional questions. If they do, please.
None for me.
Oh, I think you're muted, Judge Walker.
Thanks, sorry about that. One question, Mr. Foster. Can you give me the best case that you think I should go read that involves a play or a television show or a movie? And, you know, for your sake, this case would presumably rule in favor of a plaintiff in a false light claim or a defamation claim or something like that. But it needs to not be a newspaper article or a book review or an op-ed or a book. It needs to be a work of art on stage or on the screen. Can you give me a case I should go read?
The only one that I can come up real quickly that was a work of art, as you put it, that you watch as opposed to one that you read. I don't think there is a distinction, but assuming that there is a distinction, that's de Havilland, which is the work of art. But and de Havilland itself shows us that there the court concluded that it was complementary to de Havilland, but that is one where there's a work of art, as you described it.
Was Partington not did Partington not involve a TV show?
Partington was that's Bugliosi. Yes, it did involve a TV show. And I'm glad you said that, Judge, because that Partington is the case which specifically warns producers and authors of docudramas. It uses the word, and that's what the judge below seemed to like to call this, to avoid creating the impression that they are stating accurate facts, historical facts.
Well, I just wanted to make sure I'm just trying to recollect what the facts involved. Did it in fact involve a show or did it involve an article or both? I can't
I believe it involved
a book.
Show.
A book and a show maybe, okay.
Yes, I believe it was a show based upon a book.
Who won in Partington? The plaintiff or the defendant?
The defendant won in Partington.
So your best cases on your side are cases where the plaintiffs lost.
Well, I think if the case is set forth the circumstances in which the plaintiff wins, then yes. But I think our best case is Bugliosi in this circuit. And I think it sets out the law absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I have a question, Mr. Foster. Number one, you seem to say that this play has to have meaning. Do you have any authority for that proposition? Frankly, although I didn't watch it, I did get a scene-by-scene description of it, and it had very little meaning to me, if any. And the other question is, can we not use the playbill, which gives at least constructive notice that this is a fictional play?
To answer your last question first, I don't think you can, but even if you do, the nomenclature that you place upon it is not going to save it. Because you can, if a work that purports to be a work of fiction, just saying that it is a work of fiction doesn't save it, just like just saying it's a docudrama doesn't save it. If it infers that the person is a prostitute and a murderer, and the entire thrust of the play cannot have any meaning, to whatever extent it does have meaning, if it will have zero meaning at the end, if it has no artistic value whatsoever, then it becomes pornography, as it were. And the question is, does the nonsense that introduces pornography save it? Well, does the nonsense save this thing in which Ms. Khodorkovsky is called a prostitute and a murderer? And I don't think you can just put a title on it and save something.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Foster. We'll give you some time for rebuttal. Ms. Wall.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Barbara Wall on behalf of the appellees. May it please the court. The district court correctly ruled that the First Amendment protects the artistic expression that is the play at issue and requires dismissal of both the false light and the intentional infliction of emotional distress claims. It is abundantly clear that this is not a factual endeavor. This is a play. It is pure fiction, in the words of Partington.
Why would you say it's pure fiction? It seems to me that it's that seems to be taking a bit far. I mean, it's at least historical fiction, right? It's grounded in actual historical events. There's no doubt that the mayor, in fact, was murdered.
The mayor was murdered.
Right.
And there are characters who have names similar to those in real life.
Well, are they similar? I thought they were the actual names.
Some are real names.
Well, how about the plaintiff?
That is, the Ina character has that similarity.
How about Vladimir Putin?
He shares the same name.
How about her husband?
He shares the same name.
Right. So the relevant people, it seems like, and the mayor.
The mayor, as well as the Mikhail character's two business colleagues. And there is a Yuko Soil. That's all
right.
Correct.
I understand. I get that you're saying shares the same name. I don't know exactly what the layer of remove is between is the same name or shares the same name, because it seems to me the play is describing the actual people in the world. That doesn't necessarily mean that you lose, but it seems to me to say that it's purely fiction elides what can make this kind of case difficult, which is that at least in some situations, I would assume that a production that recounts historical fact and purports to accurately recount historical fact can be the subject of a defamation or tort action of the kind that's at issue here, on the basis that even though it's purporting to recount to every jot and tittle historical fact, it's actually getting grievously wrong, injuriously wrong, some part of it? Or do you think that can never happen?
Well, I don't want to say never, but as the tagline of the play says, it's a fictional play inspired by historic events. So there are some similarities, but there are also vast, vast dissimilarities. If you looked at the general arc of the story, there is a man named Mikhail Khodorkovsky, and he got into a big dispute with Putin. He was a political prisoner for years, and then he was released. That's what the complaint says. And he has a wife in real life whose name is Ina Khodorkovskaya. I would submit that while there are similarities to that in the play, the aspects of the play that the plaintiff finds grievous are constructs.
So then the question in my mind is, in which situations does a question like that go to the jury? And in which situations does a court decide it as a matter of law, even on a motion to dismiss? And let me ask you about Hustler v. Falwell, because you cite it in your briefs. And in Hustler v. Falwell, the same issue that to me lies at the center of this case, which is whether the portrayal of the individual in this case as a prostitute and a murderer, I know you reject, you think it doesn't portray her as a prostitute and a murderer, but just let's assume that it does because the district court did, and that's the posture in which we face the case now. The question is whether that portrayal is describing something that's an actual fact, or is it something that should be deemed by the viewer to be within the canon of dramatic license? And in Falwell, that question went to the jury. And what you're saying is here, that question should be decided as a matter of law. And I'm not suggesting that you're necessarily right or wrong. I'm just wondering why it is that in a case like Falwell, that question went to the jury. And in a case like this, it would not go to the jury.
The court has the gatekeeping function. If the cause of action fails to stand as a matter of law, as this one does not, the court has the obligation to dismiss it. And I think a closer case than Falwell is the Farah case out of this circuit, in which the court said, and that was the case, just to, because I know there are a lot of these, that was the court, the case where there was a satirical statement posted in which the an opponent of a book writer about Obama birther allegations put up a statement on a blog post saying that the publisher was going to stop publishing and pulp all of these books related to claims about then President Obama. The court and real people were confused. There were people who responded by saying, do I get my money back about this book? What's happening here? And the court explained at great length about how satire works and real people's names don't make the First Amendment protections go away.
So I don't disagree with you on that. I think you could have, certainly you can have a work of art that uses real people's names and is grounded in historical events, but takes dramatic license and ought to be understood by the audience as being a work of dramatic license such that they can't take literally everything that's said. I think that just seems like that has to be true. My question is, how do we draw the distinction between those situations in which that issue, whether the work is asserting the disputed fact as an assertion of historical fact, or whether it's something as to which the audience ought to understand that it's a matter of dramatic license? How do we determine those cases in which the court decides that as a matter of law and those cases in which it's sent to the jury?
I guess two responses to that, Your Honor. First is context. And that's baseline black letter defamation jurisprudence. And on the one hand, you have matters that, like the Farah case, where is this real or is this not real? And the court put itself in the position of the reasonable blog viewer. And in this instance, it would be the reasonable theater goer. That's at one end. All the way at the other extreme is you have this case, which is based on the context, it has to be fiction. It says right in the tagline, it's fiction. You don't go to Arena Stage to get a documentary. You go there to be entertained with the theatrical production. If you look at the abundant number of elements that clearly are stagecraft, that are inspired art, it's not just the tiger and the dead ghost mayor, it's the lawyer in the cell who's talking to the Mikael character, and then he's suddenly speaking to a crowd and there are voices chanting the protagonist's name. And I say protagonist because Now that this is a play about, as the complaint says, about the Mikhail character and his fight with Putin.
And would you not say that? So I think a lot of that is well taken. Would you not say that about the parody ad in Hustler versus Falwell? It seems like a lot of the context, I mean, the magazine it was in, the type of stuff that would typically attend that placement seems to me to be something that you would take account of as a matter of context, and a court could just say as a matter of law, we're not going to let the jury decide whether, as the court says at page 57 of its opinion, whether the Hustler ad parody could be reasonably understood as describing actual facts about Falwell or actual events in which he participated. But that issue still went to the jury in that case. And maybe it was wrong to go to the jury. The Supreme Court didn't necessarily say it was right or wrong, but that's in fact what happened in that case.
Correct. And it should not hear. In the words of this court in Farah, having a matter go that should be dismissed is not only useful or a misuse of resources, but it subjects the parties in the court to needless litigation. That's the purpose of a motion to dismiss. And that is what should be done here. You can't, in the words of Iqbal and Twombly, you can't cure a deficient complaint that fails to state a cause of action as a matter of law by giving the party some additional discovery. And as the district court asked Mr. Foster repeatedly, well, what kind of discovery would you have here that would make any difference? And there isn't any.
Can I ask you just the same question that Judge Henderson asked, which is that you referred to it a couple of times, the tagline.
Yes.
So as I understood it, the district court decided not to take that into account, but granted dismissal anyway. And it may be that, you know, you could say that, look, when you watch the play, you don't need the tagline. You understand that from watching the play, but the tagline is helpful to you. That's why you relied on your briefs, and that's why you invoked an oral argument. What's your view on whether we can take account of that at the dismissal stage?
You can, because it is, the court should be viewing it, the alleged defamatory work in context. And context is not just you can't just cherry pick certain lines out of the play, but you experience the play as the play.
But the tagline isn't in the play.
It is in the playbill, which if you looked at the video, you see audience goers leafing through the playbill. It is also,
I didn't have binoculars to see what the audience members were leafing their way through. So I'm actually asking a serious question, I think, which is that I understand that the play and the video should be treated by us as an evidence because both parties seem to agree on that. But I don't know that that means that every single thing that is associated with the play, and again, I'm not saying that you necessarily need it, but it is something that you rely on quite a bit to some effect. And I'm wondering whether there's law that says that a separate document, you know, that's in a website description is something that we take account of at the dismissal stage.
I believe there is case law on that. And I'm thinking of the several cases that, for example, Deripaska, which was affirmed by this court, where there was recognition of historical articles related to the defamation. And to the claims of the plaintiff. But as the district court said, you don't have to go there. I mean, if it's helpful, it sets the stage, no pun intended, when you walk in and you have in your hand, as well as you have purchased tickets that through the website, which is used a lot. I'm not gonna go beyond the four corners of this, but there are purchases done on the website. And the play's title is Kleptocracy, a fictional play inspired by historical, inspired by historic events.
Well, is that's in the title? What you just
said? That is the tagline to the title, yes. Yes, which is why we cited showed the website. Of course, if you are a theater goer and you walk, you know, there's no scrim, there was no stage, you come and you sit down and there's a bare stage. There's nothing that shoots the name of the play and the tagline on the screen as you're standing there.
You keep saying tagline. What do you mean by tagline? Is that the same as subtitle?
That's a good way to phrase it. Yes. The name of the play is Kleptocracy. And then there's this sentence that goes underneath it. Subtitle, but tagline.
Do we know whether the people who actually viewed it, you couldn't view it on a website, could you? Don't you have to go to the theater?
You do.
All right. And aren't they handed playbills?
They are.
So they have constructive notice that it is a fictional play.
They do, Your Honor. We would agree with that position.
Is the subtitle on the program?
It is. It's also, again, you know, on the website. But the district court, you know, found that the tigers, the ghost, all of these other elements injected that without having to be told this is a work of fiction. But either way, we believe that the district court got it right and dismissal was appropriate of both claims.
Make sure my colleagues don't have additional questions for you, Ms. Wall.
I'm looking at the Arena Stage website and the title of the play. It looks like the full title, including any subtitle, is Kleptocracy, period, full stop. But you're telling me that this play, the full title of this play, including its subtitle, is Kleptocracy, a Work of Fiction, et cetera, et cetera?
I can't get on the website right now, Your Honor, because I'll disconnect from
you. Well, no, I mean, I'm not asking you to confirm or deny the website. I'm just trying to get clarification on what you are asserting here today.
So when the tickets were purchased, and our brief at joint appendix page, I think it's 24, cited the place where you could buy tickets. And the play was then referred to as Kleptocracy, a work of historic play inspired by historic events. I can't say whether that has changed since you can no longer buy tickets. It was available only through January 2020. So what you might be seeing on the website now, Your Honor, is may not be what a theater goer saw when he or she purchased tickets.
But you're saying that every theater attendee got a program that included the words on the cover after Kleptocracy, fictional play inspired by historical events.
That's correct.
It's on the cover of the program.
Yes, it is. I would try to get you some binoculars, Your Honor, but perhaps we should have done that before.
I'm not sure that's, they have a PDF of the program and it doesn't say what you're saying it says. I don't think it matters, but.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying that it matters, but I'm curious about it as a matter of historical facts, so to speak, but okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Wall, unless my colleagues have anything further. Mr. Foster, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. You ask which are the ones that go to the jury and which are the ones that don't go to the jury. The ones that tell you that they are presenting facts and that they're presenting hard math, those are the ones that go to the jury. The ones that say, well, we don't know, this may be the case, this may not be the case, but remember, immediately after the murder scene, Putin comes back and he says, I'm gonna tell you, I forget his exact words, but incontestable, that's what he says. I'm gonna tell you incontestable facts about Portakovsky. He says, for those of us in the audience who like our incontestable facts. And then he says, and insofar as the murder is concerned, we think it is hard math. For those of us in the audience who like our hard math, the play is telling the audience, for you, we are presenting incontrovertible facts and hard math. Those are the ones that go to the jury. Now, also in Farah, which was mentioned, Farah didn't accuse anyone of criminal conduct. That's the distinction that Moldea makes. When you accuse someone of criminal conduct, it becomes a garden variety libel, in which context, as Moldea says about the case involving the sports opinion, Moldea says it didn't have to go there because it was a garden variety libel accusing of criminal conduct. That's what sets this case apart, and that's what makes it go to the jury. I might, just as an aside, Arena Stage is not a place where gullible people go. It is a place where sophisticated people go. And they go because they want to see the connection of true figures to what the playwright is asserting to be the facts, the irretrievable, immutable facts and hard math about those players. Thank you, sir.
Okay, counsel, thank you. Unless my colleagues have questions for you.
I just wanted to make one clarification, especially to be fair to Ms. Wall. There, on page one of the program, it only says kleptocracy, but on page 11, there's something called title page, and it does say kleptocracy, a fictional play, as Ms. Wall described. So I don't even know if this is something we can take judicial notice of. I don't think it matters to the reasoning, but I did want to be fair to both Mr. Foster and Ms. Wall.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. It made me nervous, but thank you for correcting that.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.
Thank you.